hearts. Please give me that love you got. I want you say yes, don't say no. Make me feel good, kiddo.
Good morning, Montreal. My name is Justin Carrier on CKUT 90.3 FM, John Abbott on the air. And today I am extremely lucky to have a very special guest virtually sit down with me this morning. The morning voice of radio in Montreal for over 40 years, ladies and gentlemen, the legendary Terry DeMonte. Thank you so much for giving me some of your time today, Terry. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Justin. Thanks for asking me to be on. I appreciate it.
Of course, of course. Just to start off, with your somewhat recent retirement from your legendary seat you filled with Shome 97.7, you've started up a project of your own with fellow morning man Ted Bird called Standing By, the Terry and Ted podcast. Can you tell me a little bit about what it is you talk about, what type of audience you try to reach, and just how it's going so far?
Well, to be honest with you, Justin, we're not really trying to target any particular audience. Ted and I have been friends and first went on the radio together back in 1985, which I know is ancient history for you. But I started at Shome in 1984, and a year later I was working with Ted. And it was the start of an amazing radio run as a radio partnership that blossomed into a lifelong friendship.
There you go.
And my arrival or my departure from Shome I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this, but it was called a retirement. But basically my contract wasn't renewed.
Okay.
So they basically were done with me. That's the business. That's the way it goes. And I understand that. I had a heck of a time and a great run there. Right. And although it was portrayed as a retirement, I really wasn't quite ready to retire.
Okay.
But I was tired of getting up in the middle of the night. And I took the summer off. And Ted and I were talking. And a couple of buddies of mine said, the podcast thing might be fun. So Ted and I talked about it, and we sort of sketched it and thought, well, let's go into a studio and have some fun with it. We got some great help from a Canadian comedian, a Quebec comedian, who's really, really talented and quite popular, especially on the Francophone side, Mike Ward, and a guy named Pantelis. They have a very successful podcast of their own, and they were pushing us to do a podcast, saying, you guys got to get back together and you have so much fun together.
Right. So it's kind of gone like kind of full circle, you can almost say.
Yeah, exactly. So Ted and I hadn't worked together for quite some time, even though our friendship sustained not working together.
We
stayed friends. We talked to Pantelis and thought, yeah, let's give this a whirl. So what we've done is we've done what we used to do on the radio, which is head into the studio and have a little bit of fun and hope people like it. And so far it's been, I'm new to the podcast game, so I'm not really sure what the metrics are on YouTube. About, I think it's almost 5,000 people have listened to the first episode. So that's, as far as podcast goes, I think that's pretty good. And people seem to be enjoying it and we're having fun with it. So in terms of who's listening and why they're listening, I really couldn't answer that, Justin, but we're having fun.
Yeah, and also I'd imagine that with your new platform, you kind of have a, looser rein as to you being in the driver's seat. Do you find you have more of an opportunity to show a different side of yourself with the lack of censorship I'd imagine you'd have in compared to being on the radio?
That's a very astute observation on your part, Justin. Nicely done. It is. I was lucky. I worked in radio in an era of the broadcast game where there was a lot of respect for talent. It was very competitive. And, if you did well and your ratings were strong, you could pretty much choose your own path in terms of what you presented. And I was always myself on the radio. I was an exaggerated version of myself, but I was always myself nonetheless.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what is different, as you pointed out in your question, is that there are no bosses. There are no there's nobody in an office saying, you guys are talking too much. Yeah. You guys are, you know, there's nobody pushing us. We can do as we please. And there's no corporate overlords,
right,
to say, you can't talk about this and you can only talk about that. So we really, it's really free reign, which is really a nice feeling. When you're on the radio, and you probably are already beginning to learn this, when you're on the radio with a partner or partners, it's kind of like a dance. And I always looked at it as old school dancers. Someone has to lead,
right,
and the other person has to follow. And when Ted and I worked, I was always the straight guy, meaning in comedy terms. Mm. I was always the straight man to Ted's very, very funny follow-up.
Yeah.
So I was always the one who in my head thought, okay, I'm going to talk about this without telling Ted what I was going to talk about, and he would react live on the air. And therein lay the magic of what I believe the magic of radio is. It's a very, very a warm and very, very intimate medium.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very genuine.
It is very genuine. And I think people who are successful in it are people who are genuine.
Absolutely.
So, long-winded answer to tell you that in the podcast, I have sort of a pencil sketch of where I want to go. But me and Ted, being me and Ted, it drives all over the road. It goes into places where I hadn't planned, and therein lies the fun and the magic of podcasting. We don't have to stop for commercials. We don't have to stop for records.
Exactly.
We can just keep going, and it's somewhat freeing a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd imagine. I just want to talk more about your final days with Shom, if that's okay with you.
Sure, absolutely. Anything you like.
So I was lucky enough to listen to your last show on the air, and there were a lot of moving moments for both you, obviously, but as well as for your listeners. You received many messages from friends of yours, such as former co-hosts Peppermint Patty, Ted Bird, and RDS play-by-play man Pierre Hood. The final song you played on the air was Aujourd'hui je dis bonjour à la vie, a song by Montreal's native progressive 70s rock group called Harmonium. How would you describe your choice in picking that final song as your kind of closing time theme?
You've done your homework, young man. Nicely done.
Thank you.
It's another excellent question, Justin. I agonized over it, to be honest with you, because there's a lot more important people in the world than me, that's for sure. But I felt a connection. When you're on the radio as long as I was with a Montreal audience, I really felt a connection with that audience, and I really felt a connection with Montrealers. And I really agonized over what my last song should be. And one of the things that I was always very, very proud of, despite my inability to, I wouldn't call myself fluently bilingual. Vous êtes bilingue, Justin?
Yeah, oui, je parle français. Yeah. Okay.
I speak French. I understand French, but I was never comfortable enough in French to say go on French radio.
Yeah.
Or French television.
Oh, I understand that.
But Shom had a massive, massive Francophone audience.
Oh, yeah.
Shom had a special connection with Harmonium. And later in my career, I became friends with Serge Fiori, who is, especially in the Francophone world, he's like the French Paul McCartney. People admire him and love him. And I was trying to think of something that spoke to my pride in bridging the divide. You know, there's a language right. divide in Montreal that's never, ever going to go away, no matter what
Absolutely.
We do.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, since I graduated high school, we've been yeah. talking about this nonsense. And one of the great sources of pride for me was that I was getting mail from Francophone saying, I began to learn English listening to you. Mm-hmm. You understand Montreal. You get Montreal. You understand the, you know, the two sides, les deux côtés of, right. of the Quebec audience. And I wanted to signal that as I was going out.
Right.
And I liked the there was a bit of a tenuous connection between what that song says right. and you know, today I say hello to life, which
exactly.
was me,
right.
which was me retiring. Mm. You know, that it was a great metaphor for the chapter I was about to embark on.
Yeah.
And also it's a song that means a lot to me. When I lived in Calgary, when I would get homesick for Montreal, I would put on harmonium. And that song, I don't know if you're super familiar with it, but it opens with opens with the sound of children playing in a schoolyard. And I knew the story. Serge had told me the story of this is back in the 70s when I was still in high school and Serge was in a band and writing songs. He was sitting in his apartment with his guitar, and across the street, the kids were out for recess, and he went out with a small tape recorder and he stuck his microphone outside off the balcony and he recorded the children playing. And then he went to the guitar and that's how the song was born.
Wow.
And when I close my eyes, when I hear those kids in the schoolyard and I close my eyes, I could see Outremont. I could see the plateau. I could see Montreal. So, you know, that song always resonated with me.
Wow.
So it had a lot of, there were a lot of reasons I chose it. One was the song resonated with me. One was the metaphor for my new chapter.
Right.
One was for my pride in trying to, you know, to build a bridge between the two communities. And I thought, yeah, the more I thought about it, I thought this is an appropriate way to say goodbye.
Man, I love stories like that. Like, I had made my prediction on what I thought you'd answer to that question. And I had really tunnel vision. You know, I thought really about the title, you know, Aujourd'hui je dis bonjour à la vie, kind of your way of saying, instead of saying goodbye, it's you saying, I guess, hello to your new chapter. But I'm more than happy about how you went about explaining that and the story behind it and all the different ways that come together to just, you know, really prove it to be your last song. So thank you so much for that.
It was a excuse me, it was a decision that I took seriously because, like I said,
absolutely, it's important.
I'm not, you know, I'm not the most famous person in the world, but I did have a very strong relationship.
Absolutely.
With Montrealers for a very long time. So I wanted it to mean something.
So once again, Terry, there is no denying that you've obviously left a legacy behind you. You've gathered generations of fans and left nothing but positivity and entertainment for everybody. Being that you got into the business as a young adult, what advice would you pass on to somebody who would be aspiring to follow in your footsteps and break into the industry? And if you yourself could have changed anything about the way you went about it, what would you do?
Excellent question. Again, I don't think I would change anything, to be honest, but I tell you that with a caveat, Justin, because I excuse me, I came into the business at a time which was entirely different than things are now. So in terms of, you know, what would I say to people who were on their way in, I've got a couple of things on that. But back in I got my first job. This is going to make me sound very old, but
no,
it's just this the truth. I got my first job in the spring of 1978, and I was but a child. I had just turned 20, I had done my interviews and everything when I was 19, and I was hired at a time and place. By the CBC in Churchill, in an opportunity that was presented to me that that doesn't exist today. And back then, I was very, very lucky to get it. They were closing a radio station in Churchill, Manitoba. Mm. They were trying to find somebody to go up there for 6 months with no guarantees at the end of it. So there was nobody that wanted to move their life up near the Arctic Circle for 6 months and then be out of work.
Yeah.
And I said, I'll go. when I applied for the gig, I was 19, and you know, the shit that I owned, you could have put in three boxes. It didn't matter to me. You know, I was basically still a kid.
Right.
And much to my great delight, they hired me. And I had been, when I was 15 and 16 and living on the West Island, there was a small radio station on the West Island called Sea Fox, which was on Hymas, which was quite popular. If you Google Sea Fox, you'll find out about it. Mm. And I just turned 15, I rode my bike up there one night, and the all night guy let me in, you know, showed me the studio for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And, then I began sending out tapes, and I send out, you know, this is prior to the internet. So what I had to do was I had to put my voice on cassette tape. Familiar with cassettes?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, good. put my voice on cassette, buy an envelope, write a letter, put their letter and the cassette in an envelope, and fire these envelopes off to as many radio stations as I could.
Yeah.
And I got rejection after rejection after rejection. Some people were good enough to write me a note. Other people just never answered.
Right.
And if you didn't know anybody to get into the business.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. It's good to know people.
It was really, really difficult.
Right.
And I didn't know anybody. There was nobody in my family, nobody that I knew that worked in the business. So I knocked on doors and went to visit guys at radio stations of Montreal asking for advice and tips. The way it worked out for me, I wouldn't change anything. But That's my tale is a tale from the 70s, which doesn't really apply in the 21st century.
Yeah, I understand.
My advice to somebody who's trying to get in is don't give up, because it's a business. It's a little bit like any creative endeavor, whether it's acting or playwriting or, you know, trying to get into the movies, whatever.
Right.
It's full of rejection. Full of people who tell you can't do it. I have a in a frame in my house, I have a audition report. I did an audition for the CBC before I got that job.
Okay.
And I got a copy of the audition report, which basically said this guy sucks and he should give up.
Yeah.
And I have that in a frame in my house because, you know, I had a pretty good run in the radio business despite someone telling me I couldn't do it. So my advice is don't give up. And when you get an opportunity, grab it.
Right.
And hang on to it with all your might. And when you are finally in, when you're given a job, don't say no to anything. If they want you to babysit the giant pumpkin at a remote broadcast, do it. If they ask you to come clean the control room on a Saturday night, do it.
Right.
If they ask you to, you know, work on Christmas Eve, do it. Mm. Just, you know, when you finally get an opportunity, make the most of it.
Right.
That's the strongest advice I could give, I think. And don't give up.
So I'd guess that process of really learning about it yourself is very important and crucial to, I guess, the, you know, working your way up.
Yeah, it is, because I was pre-internet, so
right. So it's adapting as well.
Yeah, I couldn't go online and listen to other radio stations.
Absolutely.
I had to send away for kids. I would drive to other markets and listen to all the different radio shows. You know, there were more radio stations and it was a bigger market back, you know, in this era now with corporations buying up everything and closing things down. It's a real mess. But back when I was starting, you know, when I was a kid, when I was 15 or 16 and in the car, you could drive from Montreal to Toronto and hear different radio stations in Cornwall, Belleville, Brockville, Kingston. Every time you drove another 60, 70 miles, you'd hear another local radio station with another different presentation. And I studied it, read about it. I bugged people. I asked people. I knocked on doors. I wrote letters. You, like most people who become very good at a craft, you have to become passionate about it and live
absolutely.
It
yeah.
And learn it and want to learn more about it and, you know, stand next to people who have done it and ask questions of them.
Absolutely.
Just, you know, try and become a master of the craft, because it's a bit of a craft.
Wow. Well, Terry, thank you so much. I heard everything you said and I will 100% take your advice and run with it. I just want to thank you again for sitting down with me and just thank you for everything that you've done for Montreal and for the industry in the past 40 years.
That's very kind, Justin. I appreciate that. That's very kind of you to say. I appreciate it very much.
And as well, best of luck with your new project.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. This was Justin Carrier sitting down with Terry DeMonte on John Abbott on the Air, CKUT 90.3 FM. Talk to you later, Montreal.
Good morning, listeners. I'm Lison Bédard, here with Maria Kerr and Laura D'Souza, and you're listening to John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. We've interviewed Marie-France Junot, who for a little over 11 years has been the executive director of Nova West Island, which is a non-profit community-based healthcare organization, which mission is to address the unmet needs of communities through the development and delivery of professional and innovative health services. Here's how it went.
I'm the executive director for Nova West Island, and I have been for 11 and a half years.
And I'm just going to ask you a few questions about the Nova organization. What are the goals of the organization?
Our primary mandate, our raison d'etre, is the nursing palliative care in the home for end-of-life patients living with cancer or ALS. And then in addition to that, we provide bereavement support for children and bereavement support for adults. For the kids, we see them in their school settings. We see them in the office or in their homes. And for the adults, we have individualized one-on-one phone counseling during the COVID and post-COVID. It's group support. Our day center program, which is now completely virtual, but typically pre-pandemic, we run 4 days a week, a day center for adults living with a cognitive impairment like Alzheimer's, stroke, dementia. And we also have a home support program where we have people trained as orderlies that go in and provide our patients with hygiene care and respite for the caregivers at the same time.
What is Nova's role within the community?
We fill gaps, many gaps in the public healthcare system. We work in collaboration with all the Greater Montreal Area hospitals, all the local CLSCs. We work in collaboration with a lot of community organizations so we can offer all of our patients and clients the best of care and help them navigate the healthcare system and find resources for their needs.
How is Nova funded?
The main source of funding for Nova are the thrift shops for Nova. There are six thrift shops in the West Island. So they bring us up to $800,000 a year. That was pre-COVID. We need about $1.8 million to run the organization in a year. So it's give or take about a third of our budget. We have annual fundraisers. We have third-party fundraisers. A lot of community organizations will raise monies on behalf of Nova. And in addition to that, in memoriam donations, we also have an annual campaign. Those are basically, and then a lot of, I should say, corporations, foundations, including family foundations that donate to us on a recurrent level.
And finally, what can people who are interested do to help?
many, many things. We have a volunteer opportunities document that we've created. So on that document, we basically talk about all of our different programs and how volunteers can help. So namely, in the day centers, when we're in physical presence, we have volunteers that worked as activity volunteers. We have cooks, musicians, pet therapists, music therapists. Some people come and do presentations. Right now, our volunteers are doing a pen pal project with our virtual clients. A couple of them are offering exercise classes. So that's for the day center. We have volunteer drivers that take our patients for chemo, radiation, oncology appointments. And that depends on their availability and our patients' needs. The carousel program that I mentioned for the bereaved kids, twice a year pre-pandemic, we had a weekend bereavement camp where we take the kids who lost their mom or dad, and we take them to Parc Nature Cap Saint-Jacques from the Friday through to the Sunday. So we have a core group of volunteers that help, Carol, the coordinator, to sort of program the activities and manage the camp during the weekend. We also have home visitors. So again, pre-COVID, we had more home visitors that can go in and spend some time with a palliative care or Alzheimer patient, and it gives respite to the caregivers as well. And then, of course, there's all the fundraisers, whether you want to organize a fundraiser yourself or you have, are part of a community organization, a group. Like I said before, we have a lot of third-party fundraisers that will help us stay afloat.
So thank you so much for talking to me. That was the Executive Director of Nova West Island, Marie-France Junot.
Today, we've learned a lot about this fabulous organization, which mostly helps families and loved ones who are seeking palliative care. You can make a donation and visit their website to learn more about the programs and history of the organization on novawi.org. Thank you for listening to John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. Have a good day, everyone.
Hello, welcome to CKUT 90.3 FM with John Abbott on the Air. I'm your host today, Zhuzha Thukuri, and today I went around school asking a couple of my classmates what country would they like to visit, and some of the answers were quite similar, not specifically saying that all the countries were the same, but the area was pretty specific. So let's all hop on a plane and travel a bit around the world.
So I'd like to visit Belgium, specifically Brussels, because that's where my mother comes from, and I'd like to know more about my ancestors.
I would like to visit Italy since it's filled with riches. It offers you spectacular views of cities and ancient ruins.
So I think I'd really like to go visit England one day just because my grandfather grew up there and I've always heard stories about his childhood, so I'd kind of just like to go and visit. And also just because it's a really beautiful area.
So a country that I would like to visit is Colombia because my grandma was from there. So I've only visited when I was around one, so I don't remember anything.
As you may have heard, many students replied with European countries. Some of them decided to mention places like Italy, Venice, mostly because of their architecture and history. Some students also replied with European countries because their families live in there. I believe it says quite a lot about the John Abbott student community, as for many of them highly value European lifestyle. Thank you for tuning in to CKUT 90.3 FM, John Abbott on the Air. Have a good day.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is John Abbott on the Air. I'm Evie Stockvis. See you next time.
Yeah. Now Cara Patties is on a fast break with Veggie Patty leading the charge. The pass is down deep to Goat Patty. Goat Patty passes baseline to Beef Patty. Beef Patty shoots from downtown at the buzzer. And bingo! It's in! It's in! Cara Patties wins the game and is now the world champions! The number one in Montreal. Come on down to 9550 Jean Milot in LaSalle for the best patties, roadies, jerk chicken, and more. Or call us at 438-387-4004. Cara Patties, the champions of Montreal.
Dis-moi, t'es là, quand il y a ?